looking for that perfect Christmas gift for the family? Why not a chicken? Stick a bow on top, put the chicken under the tree, and who knows, you may even have a couple eggs to fry up for breakfast Christmas morning. Give the gift that keeps on clucking. A chicken. Okay, maybe it's not the perfect gift for your family, but it is the perfect gift for a poor family in Asia. A chicken can break the cycle of poverty for a poor family. Yes, a chicken. A chicken's eggs provide food and nourishment for a family, and they can sell those eggs at the market for income. When you donate a chicken or any other animal through Gospel for Asia, 100% of what you give goes to the field. And the best gift of all, when Gospel for Asia gives a poor family an animal, it opens the door to the love of Jesus. So give the perfect gift for a family in Asia this Christmas. Give them a chicken. Call 866-WIN-ASIA. Or to see chickens and other animals to donate, go to CritterCampaign.org.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. I am Peter Rosenberger. This is the show for you as a caregiver. It's for caregivers, about caregivers, hosted by a caregiver. And it's all about the family caregiver, people who are struggling with caring for an impaired loved one. It could be somebody who's dealing with addiction or alcoholism. All of those are impairments. And we are here to help strengthen each other through this process. By the way, I stream the show. When we do the podcast, I stream it on Facebook. And I have a running challenge with Facebook on trying to get all this right. I don't know why I even do it, but I do, and I try. And some people are saying that the commercials and John are a little bit muffled, but I'm clear. I have no explanation. There's nothing I can offer to this other than to say I'm sorry. But the podcast will be very clear, and that's what this is all about. And by the way, the podcast is free if you want to subscribe to it. Wherever podcasts are downloaded, just go to Hope for the Caregiver. You can see the most recent podcast we'll have out there, hopeforthecaregiver.com. And while you're at it, look around. Look at the resources we have, the books, the CDs, the opportunity to support what we're doing. All these things are available for you. We try to put as much stuff out there as we possibly can. All right, John, I want to pivot and switch gears a little bit. You introduced me to a scenario, and I'd like for you to set it up, set the table, and let's talk about it.
Sure. Okay. So, this is a friend of a friend, but a dear friend of mine ran into this individual. They've been working with him for some time, and this young gentleman is 21. He's just a kid, and I don't know. Well, I know what led up to it, but he finds himself, and I'm a little short on the details, but he finds himself with a very autistic, profoundly autistic son, and he's 21, and his job is suffering, his emotional stability is suffering, and I don't know what kind of emotional stability I had at 21, but
what kind of emotional stability I have at 57.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But he's just in a real. I mean, he's.
He's in a bad way.
A non-significant or a non-zero amount of despair, in this and sorrow. And I remember, I got not necessarily lucky, but I can't imagine having to deal with something like that at that age. This child is, 4 or 5 years old. So this young man was 16, 17 years old when this journey started. And
babies having babies.
But it's been going on for, the entire recorded history of humanity. So this is not a judgment call. This is,
no, but the
this that, is just is, a statement of fact. Yeah.
It is a brutal reality for children, for anybody that young to have a child, to be responsible for another human being. That is a brutal reality in of itself.
Correct.
But when you throw in profound autism, you're dealing with a reality that has crippled many stable adults.
Right.
And I think you mentioned that he had kind of a meltdown at work.
He did.
And was in the corner crying kind of thing. And, you know, I got to tell you, when I heard that, I could picture that. I know all the listeners can, too, can picture that. We've all, if you've had any kind of skin in the game as a caregiver, you've been in the corner crying or under the bed at a fetal position crying.
Yeah. You know,
if you've got any skin in the game with this, you understand what that level of despair feels like. And sometimes when you go to work, that's the only place that you can do that. And then your job suffers because that's not the appropriate place to do it. And you don't know what else to do.
Yeah. And then, you know, then somebody comes down on you at work because you've been slipping or whatever, because of all, you know, understandably so, but it's still, you know, more stress and more stress. And then you end up with this vicious cycle of stuff. And I thought, you know, when I heard this, I thought back to something that you've said a couple of times. You know, you've written a couple of books, and you mentioned that when you speak on caregiving, a lot of times you are speaking to that 26-year-old Peter.
22,
and
actually.
22, well, yeah. Yeah, right.
I turned 23, two weeks before we got married. And Gracie was already hurt when I met her.
Yeah.
And so I was a baby myself, and you're right. I look back and I think, you know, I feel bad for that young man because I was so unprepared, and I freely admit it. When you told me about this young man, I thought about this, and I've thought about it all week. Because there are a lot of people that listen to this show and download this podcast, and they're dealing, and autism is a big issue. And when people think of caregiving, they usually think of seniors. And you and I have worked hard over these last 8 years to redefine the conversation to basically just include chronic impairment of any kind.
Right. Yes.
And so the first thing for this young man, and I know that you're going to send this recording. He's going to hear this.
Yes.
And so will others that are dealing with the same thing. And,
well, if he
and
chooses to listen, yes.
If he chooses to listen, he will have access to it.
Yes.
But I would suggest that the first thing, the best thing for, first off, just take a breath. Just take a deep breath and slow, just a slow, deep breath and let it out really, really, really slowly. And then he's in Tennessee. And I would call Autism of Tennessee. Babs Tierno is the executive director there. And just a wonderful person. She's been on this show. And she has two children with autism. But they have the first thing they could offer this young man is that they speak the language. It is so – until you, when you get this, when you've experienced it, you really get this. When you hear somebody speak in your native language after being around a bunch of people who don't, it is truly a wonderful thing. And if you've ever traveled overseas and then you get to a place where you hear a voice, when I'm in Ghana or wherever, and I hear somebody talk with an American accent, or better yet, a Southern American accent.
Yes.
If I hear a y'all somewhere, you know, it is so comforting to hear it in my own native tongue. And this is where right now where this guy is, he's in an environment now where nobody speaks his language.
He's learning a language.
He's learning it and he's learning it all on his own. And I would call these folks and start at least having a conversation with people who speak the language and can help him understand this a little bit better. Because I think that's the first step, is to build this bridge for himself to out of this quagmire, and people can help him do it. And there are people, there are organizations out there that can help him do it. And then they will also help him if they don't help him, read my book. Cause I have a chapter on this, but, of talking to employers about what you're dealing with and helping to explain it to employers. It's you know, one of the things I talk about is be forthright with your supervisor, with your boss. You know, be forthright with it. I call it the three F's. Don't try to somehow, you don't have to give all the details, but do be forthright with it. So look, I'm dealing with an incredibly difficult burden. The second one is ask for and give flexibility to the best of your abilities. And then the third thing is give a fair day's work for your pay. Make it up. Don't slouch on it at all and use your right. caregiving as an excuse. Even if you have to work around time frames and so forth. But those are things that, you know, most employers will understand. But then you also, at the same time, need to be working on a path of stability for yourself in this, because it's unsustainable for you to keep having meltdowns at work. That's unsustainable. It's not going to end well. And this child with autism needs an employed father. And that's going to take a lot of help from some folks. And there are people that can help and will help. But it starts with learning to speak the language. And I think, you know, the autism chapter of what there's so many wonderful groups out there for autism. Autism Speaks and so forth. And they're out there and they are ready to serve. And these people, these are committed people. The journey, and they take this very personally. This is a personal mission. It's not a job. It's really almost a calling, I guess, is the best way to say it.
A vocation, yeah.
Yeah, it is a tremendous journey for them as well. And I have found that the more you speak into other people's lives, the stronger you get in your own circumstances. I've been doing the show long enough. So those are my initial thoughts with this young man.
I've heard a lot of that before. The thing that I hadn't really, that you and I haven't really spoke about too, because it's such a huge subject. But we haven't really dived into, you know, relationships with employers very much. We've mentioned it here and there, but, I think that's a very valuable thing to, I like what you went into with that was, seems like it would be very valuable, especially to a 21-year-old, because they're still just learning. You know, when I was 21, yeah. I was still learning how to be an employee, period.
You know, it's clock. Like,
yeah, yeah. Like, what's 401k? What's that? I don't know. Like, that's, you know, I had little part-time gigs here and there, you know, when I was in college and stuff. So, but this guy's full-on doing a great job, and, you know, he's getting the work. It's the emotional aspects of it where he's faltering for good reason.
I have found, by and large, most employers, if you're forthright with them, if you're not shirking, but you're, you know, you're honest in your efforts here, and trying to really do the right thing, will work with you. Now, they can't do it in terms, they're not a social worker. They're there to make a profit.
Yeah.
And so you have to weigh some of these things out for the long term. But it may not be the best fit for you to be at that job and have the flexibility you need for a child with autism. It may not be the best fit. But this is where you are. And I worked in jobs. I got to tell you, I worked in jobs that I really did not like. And I did it for two reasons. One of them is the proximity and flexibility I had to be able to care for Gracie.
Yeah, location.
Health insurance. Health insurance.
Yeah. Well, and we're getting a lot better about, many large employers are getting a lot better about having an HR department that does provide an awful lot of resources. Like, hey, we've got, you need a group meeting or something like that. Well, we've got a list.
They have counseling. They have six free counseling sessions that they'll have with certain. It depends on how large the employer is.
Sure, sure, sure.
That they'll do with they'll outsource counseling, and I think that is a marvelous. And check into it. I mean, he may be at a very small company. I don't know, but if you know this company.
This is
okay.
A big company.
Well, if it's a big company, then that would be a place to start and say, look, I am overwhelmed. I am way in over my head. You know, and it's okay to admit that. You don't have to give details and you don't have to go there with your hat in your hand, but it's okay for you to say, I need help. And I'm gonna give a personal example of go ahead.
Oh, I was thinking time you do that is gonna be very, very difficult, but it is going to be practice for the next three or four times that you have to do that, because you're going to have to do it again.
Three or 400 times.
Yeah. You know what I mean.
Don't
get me caught up on the math here, okay? Come on now.
Well, I was, you know, I, I was I've been struggling with my leg. It's been hurting, and I haven't been sleeping, and I don't want to take a lot of pain medication because I just don't particularly want to introduce that into my body very much, and I'm not very good at taking medication anyway. I've never really been sick. Which is surprising. I've been a caregiver now in my 35th year.
Physically.
Yeah, I know, I know. That diagnosis sailed a long time ago. But I've been a caregiver for a long time, and I broke down and just went down to the clinic and said to the doc down there, I was talking to him on this last weekend, I said, look, man, I'm really struggling here. I'm not sleeping. This thing is keeping me up at night. I can't function. You know, I have literally written the book for caregivers, and look at me, man, I'm falling apart. And I need some help. What does help look like here? And he and I kicked around some ideas of things we can do, and I think we got a pretty decent plan. And it was embarrassing a little bit, you know.
Yeah,
here I am.
I have the nation's
largest platform, broadcast wise, for family caregivers. I've literally written the books for family caregivers, and here I am in that same place. But that's my journey. That's who I am. I'm a caregiver, and I need help too. And I need to be reminded of these things too. And so. It is difficult to ask for. And, my in-laws did something for me yesterday. He said, we live next door to them out here in Montana. They live up the hill. Next door in Montana, by the way, is not what it is in a suburb.
Right.
You know, 3 days later, we find at their house, you know, but they live up the hill. And I was hurting. It hurts to sit in the car for lengthy periods of time. And there were some prescription Gracie needed in Bozeman. Well, that's 60 miles away. And the pharmacy that's local to us doesn't really carry some of the things that she needs, since we have to go to a bigger pharmacy. And they offered to go and get that. And I when they got back, I looked at them. Of course, I've been taking care of their daughter now for a long time. But I looked at them, and I was able just to, and I got a little bit emotional. And I said, I want you to know how much this means to me. I'm not used to needing help like this. And I'm certainly not used to asking for it. But I have to ask, and I have to accept it, and I have to let you know how grateful I am. And they were like, they looked at me kind of like, what's the matter with you? Of course, it's our daughter, and it's you. But at the same time, that's how we caregivers feel. And so this young man who's doing this, understand that you've got an old man who has his own radio show for caregivers who deals with the same thing, and it's okay to ask for help. In fact, it's not only okay, it's imperative. And help is available. And we want to give you all the tools that we can here to shepherd you along the way. This is Hope for the Caregiver. It's hard enough being a caregiver. It's impossible to do it alone. Let's do it together. Healthy caregivers make better caregivers. John and I'll be right back.
Have you ever struggled to trust God when lousy things happen to you? I'm Gracie Rosenberger, and in 1983, I experienced a horrific car accident leading to 80 surgeries and both legs amputated. I questioned why God allowed something so brutal to happen to me. But over time, my questions changed, and I discovered courage to trust God. That understanding, along with an appreciation for quality prosthetic limbs, led me to establish Standing with Hope. For more than a dozen years, we've been working with the government of Ghana and West Africa, equipping and training local workers to build and maintain quality prosthetic limbs for their own people. On a regular basis, we purchase and ship equipment and supplies, and with the help of inmates in a Tennessee prison, we also recycle parts from donated limbs. All of this is to point others to Christ, the source of my hope and strength. Please visit standingwithhope.com to learn more and participate in lifting others up. That's standingwithhope.com. I'm Gracie, and I am Standing with Hope.
Because if we're... If